of the crop.
Hello and welcome to Guna Podcast number 135. We're putting this down, as the cool kids say, on the Tuesday night after the 5-0 win against Villa. And if that wasn't exciting enough, we also have a TV crew from ESPN Brazil filming us. Well, not us. They're doing a feature on one of our panellists. Who is the famous one? Wait and see. Anyway, I'm your host, Mark Ollington, back once again like the Renegade Master or something. But on tonight's panel, that's what you want to know about. Who do we have? Well, first up, the man behind this podcast, the website, the fanzine, former editor, current publisher, and the man who looks the same as when I first met him back in 1998. He still has all his lovely hair. It is Mr. The Guna, Mike Francis.
That's very pleasing of you. Kind of you to say so, but I don't look the same, trust me. Look at the photos.
Mike, you pay for this. Well, you pay for the podcast and stuff, mate. It goes without saying, we'll give you some credit. Next up is a panel member who's been doing this pod since it started back in 1936 or something like that. He's our maverick, our touch of flair, our man in the hole. It's Mustafa Goldstein. Hello, Mustafa.
Hello.
Lastly, is a Guna contributor, Arsenal columnist, and Brazilian football writer. The TV crew are actually here for him, fact fans. He has something in common with another panellist, Mr. Goldstein, as both are happily loved up with Brazilian ladies. It is a legend. This is Mr. Tim Stillman. Hello, Tim.
Hola.
But once again, you lot out there in podcast land have set the topics and the agenda. They have come from your tweets and emails from our loyal listeners, so we'll try and cover as many as possible. But last but not least, this pod is once again hosted by Piebury Corner. Not only have we eaten this amazing deli pie experience tonight, but we're recording here too. We hope the background ambience enhances the podcast experience. So, speaking of our hosts, Piebury Corner, they too have got in on the tweet action. And they said to us today on Twitter, shouldn't it be called a piecast, seeing as we're hosting it? Very funny, guys, and a great tweet. Thank you. But enough of the sponsors. On to the first topic. Our own panel, since we spoke last, if I can talk, it was going so well. We have embarked on 4 wins in a row and three clean sheets in the league. How is our general vibe? Are we happy? Are we positive? How does it feel being up for once as a Guna? Let's start with you, Tim.
Yeah, very nice actually. I don't think it's really nice that we've got this clutch of kind of 6 or 7 players, I think, that are really, really in good form. Some of them the absolute form of their lives. And what's quite interesting is that a lot of them are players that you probably wouldn't have kind of picked out in August or September. I don't think anybody thought that Francis Coquelin would be part of a pretty decent unbeaten run, or David Ospina, Santi Cazorla playing the absolute football of his career at the moment, Olivier Giroud as well in wonderful form. So we've just got this really nice kind of clutch of 6 or 7 players who are just playing brilliantly, and that's kind of their form is informing the team's form and vice versa, so it's a really nice kind of cycle going on at the moment, and let's hope Tottenham don't ruin it on Saturday.
How was your general mood in the first few months of the season, Tim? Were you kind of imbued with negativity?
Not quite, no. I was a bit concerned because I think after winning the FA Cup last year and finishing last season strongly, you know, we had a strong start in the transfer market. I think everybody was in a really good place and thought, not that we're going to win the league, but right, we're going to have a title challenge this year. And actually, we had a very stuttering start. A lot of players affected by the World Cup, I think, trying to change the formation, and it didn't, had mixed success. So it was a bit of a bitty start to the season. So I was a bit disappointed, but nevertheless, I didn't really think it would last. I always felt that it would come together at some point, and hopefully that's what we're seeing now.
Mike, good vibes for you. Happy, over the moon, ecstatic, to use the football cliches.
I mean, at the moment, you've got to be happy, and I do find it quite depressing that there's so many Arsenal fans I see commenting on the Guna website who just can't enjoy a 5-0 home win over Aston Villa because they have such a negative feeling towards the manager. And it's like, you know, I'm I'm still of the view, I'm not going to change my view just because of a couple of results, that Wenger's taken us as far as he can. But right at the moment, things are looking good. And, you know, he's changed, tactics have changed. Whether it was him or the players, he suggested it was the players at Man City. Fine. Doesn't matter. The team won. Let's just enjoy that. And the game against Villa, yeah, okay, Villa haven't scored in 25 years or whatever it is, I don't know. And they were crap. It, you know, they fell apart in the second half.
But they didn't have David Platt in goal this time.
Well, yeah. Glad to hear you said that, because yeah. I thought I said that on Sunday to someone.
91 season, and he even wore an Arsenal shirt when he went in goal.
Because he didn't have another goalkeeper stop to go and put on. But, you know, you've got to enjoy 5-0. We played well. You know, and to Tim's point, you know, there are a number of players that are playing well. And we've bemoaned the injuries for so long. Now a lot of those players are coming back, and they're actually having to fight for their place. Maybe it's having the positive effect that we need. We'd have liked it 3, 4, 5 months ago, but hey, enjoy it while it lasts, because it won't last forever.
Basti, do you share these views?
Well, I think that the people who tweet in or write in and have forgotten how to, they've forgotten how to enjoy winning, you know, there's been a lot of frustration. The start of the season, I found it very difficult to watch Arsenal and suffer until the end, and then throw away silly points, silly goals, and it's almost as though there was this sort of resentment building up, and you just started going, oh, fuck Arsenal, you know. I think now that the good news is we've got these players coming back, and the first half against Villa, you could see it. People already having a go at Walcott, having a go at Ozil. They weren't pulling their fingers out, and then, you know, they suddenly pop up, score a couple of pretty good goals. I've got to say, Walcott took that. It wasn't easy to take that the way he did and finish it. That was a really good finish, and Ozil's finish was great as well. You know, they're going to take time to come back and get fit, and players blow hot and cold. I remember standing up the North Bank in the 70s and 80s, watching players, didn't do a thing the whole game, then scored the winning goal. You know, that happens. You know, so what I think is great now is that we've got a bench again, which looks like, you know, you could take players off, bring them on. Rositsky's firing all cylinders, and I hate to say it, I'm not missing Podolski, which I was the day he went. I was, how dare they get rid of Podolski? But now looking at it, I can kind of see what Wenger's thinking there. You know, Podolski would probably be wasting his time.
Fair enough. Now look, let's go back to some of the games we've had since the last Guna podcast. I think the game that has caused us most happiness and celebration was Man City away from home. How did that, I mean, we've got loads of tweets about this, but Mark Holmes has basically asked, player power? ? And a lot has been said about our tactics in that game. What was it, 35% possession, something like that? I know. What happened to make us actually win that game? Tim, you're a man who writes about tactics. I'm going to start with you. Expect something good and incisive here, mate.
Okay. I think Arsene Wenger's very happy to let his players think that they masterminded that. Arsenal have played that way away from home against big teams before. Borussia Dortmund, when we won there a couple of years ago. We've done it twice, I think, at Bayern Munich. I think we tried to do it at Chelsea, but Chelsea, kind of the marginals went their way that day. And if you look at the Man City and Chelsea games, they're actually very similar. Both 0-0, very tight, no chances. At Stamford Bridge, Eden Hazard produces a bit of magic, they get a penalty, they go 1-0 up, they dominate the game. At City, it's 0-0, no chances, very tight. Nacho Monreal produces a piece of magic.
I never thought I'd hear that. My words.
Nacho Monreal and Eden Hazard.
Well, it's coming good, to be honest with you. He's looking quite solid.
And then we get the penalty, and that means we control the game and we dictate the tactics. And you know, little marginals went our way that day, and you know, they didn't. Aguero wasn't really fit. Vincent Kompany had been out for 6 weeks, so he wasn't really firing. Yaya Toure wasn't playing, whereas Arsenal were playing well. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm, whereas Stamford Bridge, we tried to do exactly the same thing, and not necessarily, we didn't necessarily do it badly, it's just that was an imperfect storm that went against us. I think this thing about, you know, Wenger saying, oh, the players came up with it, he said straight after the game that he hoped the City result would give them confidence. If you actually read the quotes, he didn't say in as many words, the players told me to do this. But I think he was quite okay for it to be twisted that way, because if he's talking about giving his team confidence, then, you know, kind of letting them take the credit, I think he'll be absolutely fine with that, and he won't be in a rush to correct that at all.
I think we've said, I probably said in the last podcast I was on, you know, Wenger trusts his players so much, you know, and he always wants them to solve the problems on the pitch. He's not going to stand on the touchline and rant and rave and point in this direction and that direction. And, you know, we criticised him for that then, so surely you have to then go, well, if he's let the players sort it out and they finally, the penny's dropped with them, then give them bloody credit for doing so, and give Wenger credit for letting them carry on doing it. Maybe, you know, he could have pointed them in the right direction earlier, yeah, but, you know, fair play, it worked. And I mean, the Man City game was just so untypical of everything we've seen for the last 5 years, where we go up and every time they cross the opposition cross the halfway line, we're all, our hearts are racing, going, oh shit, they're going to score here. And I didn't feel like that at all in the game. You know, they had a couple of chances, yeah, but no team's going to go 90 minutes without getting a chance. And we dominated them despite only having 35% possession. And when they put the stats up at the end, well, I've never been one for looking at the possession stats, but when they put it up, I was like genuinely shocked that we'd had as little as 35%, because it didn't feel like that watching the game.
Not as shocked as we were, surely, as I was when after the Villa game, Villa had more possession of the ball than we did, according to the BBC.
Yeah. Well, I was coming to that. Yeah, yeah.
But another point is that I think two very massive factors of the wins at City and our general good form. Needless to say, the clean sheets. Now, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to work out that something's going very right in the goalkeeping department at the moment, and I think Wenger's caught on to that one. Ospina is safe hands Ospina. I mean, he comes out, he claims things, there's a nice ripple of calmness that emanates out from the back now that certainly wasn't there when Chesney was the captain of the defence, which that's a big one. And in front of the defence, there's Coquelin, a.k.a. The Cock, he was called the other day, I think. Villa, are we going to have a song now for him?
Oh, I'd love a song. Yes, I'd love a song.
All right, I can't remember how it goes. You'll have to sing it, Mark.
We've only got one cock. We've only got one cock. We've only got one cock.
One cock! We've only got one cock. We've only got one cock. We've only got one cock.
That's Coquelin, by the way.
That was marvellous, Basti. Excellent.
It wasn't that good, actually. I forgot the chords, but never mind. We've
got almost as good as Highbury Sunshine, available now on Cherry Red Records. Anyway, we had another tweet. We mentioned it from KK at Red Square KK, as he calls himself in Twitterland. So, with regards to the previous matches, what is our best starting team, and is Ozil in it? So let's not go through this with the whole thing. You mentioned the keeper, but starting with you then, Mike. Do you have a favourite team at the moment, and would you have Ozil?
I think it depends on the game. I think Ozil had a great game against Villa, and that's probably his best game in probably a year, if we're honest. I know he's been injured for a lot of that, but I wouldn't play him against Spurs away on Saturday. You know, I think he's a player that needs time on the ball, isn't going to track back, isn't going to get into a war of attrition. Spurs games are always a battle, even when they're shit, which is always, obviously. I wouldn't play him. I think Sanchez will come back into the team, and I'm not sure about Walcott either. I think Walcott or the Chamberlain or Rosicki, I'd play probably either one of Rosicki or Chamberlain ahead of Walcott at the moment in that game. But then we play Leicester, midweek next week. Ozil and Walcott probably straight back in then for that one.
So basically what you're saying is there's no real starting 11. It should be based upon the team that we're playing for once and the relevant players, the relevant matches. Tim, something you actually would like to see Wenger do?
Yeah, definitely. Adapt the team? I think there's too much obsession over starting 11s. I think, yes, you know, opposition comes into it, form comes into it, fitness comes into it. I think at the moment, what we've got is we've got some really good partnerships all over the pitch, and I think Coquelin has played very, very well, but that's been aided and abetted by having Cazorla and Ramsey with him, who I think dovetail really nicely because they're both nice and disciplined. They can both get forward as well. And I'm actually really liking the look of Cazorla, Ramsey and Coquelin in quite a disciplined three, but that has the potential to kind of go forward. And Ozil on the left, because I think Ozil's lack of tracking back matters less when you've got three quite nicely disciplined midfielders. I think the back line, I don't think it's any coincidence, there's some consistency in selection now, and that's why we're seeing better defensive performances, because the same players are playing and putting games together. And I do actually like Ozil on the left. I think the other thing as well defensively is if you don't lose the ball, that's a very good defensive tactic, and Ozil doesn't lose the ball. One thing that's really underrated about him as well, and the reason I quite like him, a little bit further up the pitch on the left wing, almost in a kind of quite a Pires role, but similar in that Ozil is a great finisher. Try and think of chances he's missed when he's put through on goal. Not many. And I actually really like him on that kind of left-hand side. I thought he looked like a real goal threat against Villa. So, at Spurs on Saturday, I'd be more than happy to see Ozil on the left, Sanchez in on the right. But there are so many different permutations, and I really don't think we need to worry too much about what the first 11 is. I think, the kind of what it comes down to on the day is, there's too many factors that are very malleable, and therefore, we should just enjoy the fact that we've probably got 16, 17 players who could very easily be in our starting 11 at the moment.
Do you think Ozil and Santi could start together against a big team, which is what KK at Red Square, KK, your Twitter name, was getting at, Basti?
I think they can, but it depends who's going to drop out, because at the moment you've got an embarrassment of riches for creative attacking midfielders. I actually disagree a little bit with Tim in that I think Cazorla and Ramsey, they've now started to tighten up their game a little, but I thought the first half of the season there was a lot of they're giving the ball away a lot. I think Ramsey's still got to find his confidence somehow, because in front of goal he really ought to have scored recently. I can't remember which game it was the cup game, wasn't it? And other little things where you see he seems to be still chasing the game a bit. He's not that confident Ramsey that he was last season, and Cazorla has now. I mean, I've been slagging Cazorla off all season, and like being the football fan I am, I'm entitled to my fickleness, and I will be fickle and say that now he's playing very well. He's tightened his game up. He still hangs on to it a bit too long for me, and he could pass it. But hey, you know what? When he skins three players and does make a pass, then fair play to him. And he's going great guns, isn't he? So I can't really knock him.
I love Santi so much, Basti. I think we need a song.
All right, then.
Oh, Santi Cazorla. Oh, Santi Cazorla. Oh, Santi Cazorla.
Fantastic. That is a poet, a singer in action.
No, that's Santi Cazorla.
Both of you share much in common, but not height, because obviously you're quite different with regards to that, which you can't see on podcast land. But Basti's a very tall man, which obviously Santi isn't. One last tweet about the team before we get onto the transfer window. Yakubu Musa, I hope I pronounced your name right. He asks, is our team better off without our best player, Sanchez? The Villa match unearthed some issues. Is it an Ian Wright type scenario where some people moaned and moaned and moaned he was the entire focal point and the team disintegrated in the wake of that? Basti, that tweet's for you.
Well, I think Sanchez is a great player and he's going to start every time, apart from occasionally. That even when he wants a rest, he never wants a rest, but when Wenger wants to rest him, he's saying, I don't want to play. I think Wenger does have to, every now and again, against a team like Villa, you can afford to rest him and win, because Villa were pants, to be honest with you. No disrespect to Villa fans, but I think they'll all agree with that. Poor Blighters made the journey down here and had to sit there and watch that. It's pretty painful stuff. I'm getting them back for that time Santa Claus crashed into Villa Park's roof. I was there for that one. We were winning 2-0, and then the Santa Claus crashed into the roof. And we lost. It was the weirdest day of all time.
See, on Dublin, wasn't it?
So I owe them one for that. No, I think, what was the question again? I've gone all blank.
Are we better without Sanchez in the team?
Well, no, it's not a case of that. You know, for me, there are definite starters. There's, you know, Giroud is, you know, he's looking class at the moment. I think Sanchez is a starter. I think Ospina's a starter. I think Coquelin is a starter. I think you want to have Mertesacker and Koscielny. And actually, I like Debussy as well. Sorry, so going back to the question before, but
yeah, because that's what, you know, our tweeter did want to answer Basti. You know,
well, I thought I'd just sort of mingle them into one thing, you know. But yeah, ultimately, yeah, you want to start with Sanchez, and you want to start with Ian Wright as well. And when Ian Wright isn't there, you know what? The team, people like Cazorla, they up their game because it's like, well, Sanchez isn't here now. I've got that space. I've got to fight a little harder. Now, that's what Sanchez does. Is he's passionate and he runs and he runs and he runs and he just goes for everything. And that's what we need a bit more. One little criticism against Villa: Ospina had the ball a couple of times in the first half, and there were eight players behind the ball, slowly walking out of defence after a corner. And I got up and I said, "Get an effing move on, you gits!" I was quite angry. And then they actually did. They started playing again. So obviously, I have magical powers. But I was saying, I was saying to the bloke next to me, why isn't Wenger getting up there and screaming at them? Because they'd gone into that. We're 1-0 up. Let's put our high heels on and walk down the catwalk and show how good we are. You know what I mean? By defending corners for 20 minutes. So anyway, there you go. But I think Sanchez. To answer the question, Sanchez, yes, 90% of the time.
Would you back up Basti there, Mike?
Such a long-winded answer. I can't remember what he was saying. Yeah, I mean, Sanchez has got to play. I mean, it would be ridiculous not to at the moment. But you know, they looked good on Saturday without him, but it was against Villa, and that doesn't mean that you don't play your best player, and he is our best player without a doubt. You know, I said earlier I'd bring him in for Ozil, but great, we've actually got choices to make, and that's something we've not been able to say for a while. So but you know, just because we won one game 5-0 without him, I don't think it means that we shouldn't play it.
I would agree, even though
that's
I'm not
a
here
shorter
to give my
answer
opinions.
Than Basti. It is much the same,
succinct,
I think. Yeah.
Concise, and you know what Twitter is all about. We're now going to move on to the January transfer window.
Tweet, yes,
indeed, Basti. The January transfer window came and went like a damp squib. I think yesterday's one was probably the most least exciting night I've had in the Sky Sports news in a long time. Don't know why I stayed up at all. Pointless. Anyway, we've got a barrage of tweets about the January transfer window. And we'll start off with our big money signing. And Tim, I'm coming to you first, Mr. Brazilian football expert. First and foremost, a hot debate has been raging. And the player that we got, I can call him Gabriel, right? I can't call him Palista.
No.
Why is that, Tim? Were you kind of that clear for our listeners?
We're not confident yesterday night now. Tim's going to be here all
You've
night.
You've got 3 minutes, Tim.
Right, okay. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, but Palista is a pluralist term for someone from Sao Paulo. So Gabriel makes sense because that's his name. He'll be referred to as Gabriel Paulista in Brazil because there'll be lots of footballers called Gabriel in Brazil. Therefore, they need to differentiate all of these footballers. And you see it a lot. It's very, very common for kind of players to have where they're from kind of suffixed onto their names. For the purposes of Arsenal in England, it is not necessary. There are no other footballers called Gabriel from Brazil, so we don't need to use it. The same way that Ronaldinho is known as Ronaldinho Gaúcho in Brazil, there is no need to call him Gaúcho here because there's no other Ronaldinho. So it's redundant, but to just call him Paulista means you're just saying from Sao Paulo, so it doesn't make any sense.
That is why people listen to this podcast. Amazing facts.
So what if there was another Gabriel footballer from Sao Paulo? What would you call him?
They would call one Gabriel and one Gabriel Paulista.
And what if a footballer was called Jack Londoner?
It's like Gilberto, right? There were two Gilberto Silvers in the Brazil squad at one point. So the Arsenal Gilberto just took Gilberto, and the other one took Gilberto Silva.
I never knew that.
I didn't know that. Brilliant.
This podcast is brilliant. Now, Tim, being the expert that you are on Brazilian football, have you seen this guy play much? I know he's been playing in a different league, a Spanish league, but have you seen much of his game?
No, I haven't. I saw him play, I think, twice for Vitória, and one of those times was at left back. So I can't really formulate much of an opinion on the player. What I can tell you is that over the last 18, you know, this time 18 months ago, he was playing for Vitória, a small club in quite an inferior league in Brazil. So for him to move to Spain and take to that so well and so quickly that he's now got a move to the Premier League is very, very big. And, you know, Gabriel, it's weird because he doesn't have much of a profile in Brazil. Like, he's never played for the national side. He moved to Europe the same summer that Neymar left, that Paulinho left, that Bernard left. So his transfer to Villarreal flew completely under the radar. So he's come up very quickly, but very, very quietly. But what he's going to find now is that he plays for Arsenal, and the first time he plays for us, everybody in the world is going to have a very definite opinion about how good Gabriel actually is. Whereas the last 18 months, he's come up very quickly, but really under the radar as well. And so there's going to be an adaptation period because he's had two big promotions football wise and it's going to be a bit different for him, everybody analysing his game, whereas he's been able to get on with things much more quietly. So I think, you know, this should be an adaptation period until the summer, and hopefully he'll have a full pre-season because he won't go to Copa America with Brazil. So probably next season you'll start to see, you know, the real Gabriel.
Mike, you heard much about this player before we signed him? You, Basti?
I just shook my head again.
That could be a good sign, because we've had players before that Wenger's bought that no one's heard of, and they ended up being called Patrick Vieira and Pires and God knows what. I don't know if he's one of those, but no pressure there then after what you said on him. But hopefully there won't be any injuries. Maybe he won't be needed in the short term, and so he doesn't get some sort of baptism of fire that kills off the rest of his career, you know. But let's see. I've never seen him kick a ball, so I really can't say.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give an opinion on him. But I mean, you know, as Tim said, he's been playing in Spain, which is not badly.
It's all right. It's decent teams.
I've been putting together a pretty good defensive record. He's been a key part of that. We needed a centre back, everyone was agreed on that. He actually can play across the back line, as far as I can tell. Well, you know, it kind of ticks a lot of boxes, and he's an ugly bastard, so that's a good thing. And I say that being very ugly myself, so.
Mike, that's not what I see now. I see a face of beauty. Now, Mark Holmes has been tweeting so many questions, he must be on Twitter 24/7. But one of his more interesting ones was, no defensive midfielder has been bought because of Coquelin. Is he a stopgap or good enough to become Gilberto Mark II? We've had his song, let's talk about the man. Basti, start with you. How good is Coquelin?
I am very impressed with, you know, he went away on loan, he's come back, and he just looks like the rounded, the tackles he was putting in against Villa, and he is that defender. I mean, he's doing something, you know, the enforcer, rather. He's doing what Flamini and Arteta can't do, really. They don't have the build for it and all the sort of savagery and fitness that he has. He also is a very good passer of the ball, and I think we've found something, someone there who is what I've been crying out for years, someone in front of the back four who's going to protect it and then turn defence into attack. So, albeit I'd have preferred a Petit and Vieira, having one of the two isn't bad. And I don't think he's either Petit or Vieira, but he's just what we need right now. And that, I think he was what was missing against Chelsea that game there. We didn't have that guy, you know, because Tim mentioned Chelsea earlier and that defeat. And I think had we had a fully fit Coquelin in place like he does now, could have been a different ball game.
Maybe Eden Hazard doesn't make it to the penalty area, for example.
Gets his legs taken from under him.
Yes.
Coquelin makes the tackles that we've been crying out for. He makes the tackle, the clever tackles, which... a dirty, cynical, call it what you like, but...
Well, they're accurate, but they get the ball.
Well, I'm not sure they always do, to be fair, but who cares? If they're done in the right place and they stop the opposition getting a shot on goal or the goal itself, then all fair play to them. And, you know, I think he has been a bit of a revelation, and I think he's probably taken most of us by surprise. I don't think there was too many of us, even 2 months ago, were saying, you know what, we don't need to go and buy a centre back. We've got Coquelin back off loan from Charlton, you know, where he's been pulling up trees. Oh no, he hasn't. You know, Charlton weren't interested in buying him, as far as I can tell, although that might be pure rumour. But he's coming, and what I like about him is he knows his limitations. I disagree slightly with Basti saying he's a great passer. He does. He can pass the ball 5 yards. You know, I'm capable of doing that once in a while. But He's not going to play the 40-yard through ball. That's no, not his game. Great.
But he knows his limitations.
Exactly,
and
knows his limitations.
That's better than someone who can't pass the ball trying to do
and
that.
I always thought Alex Song got ahead of himself. He played those couple of balls over the top. Van Persie converted one, missed one, you know. And suddenly Alex Song was like, I can be the playmaker. I'm fucking my defensive duties off. I'm now going to gallop forward and make all these goals. And he never made another one all season, as far as I can recall. But the number of goals we let in as a result of him galloping forward was countless. And I was just think Cochrane is just like, you never see him go forward unless there's more than sufficient defensive cover. He sits there, he makes tackles, he'll make fouls when he needs to. Great.
Wenger actually gave a really interesting interview, which I don't think was widely broadcast, with Alan Smith, I think, last week, and he said something really similar. He said where Coquelin started to go wrong in his early 20s was that Coquelin thought that he was a box-to-box midfielder. And that he was trying to do too much. He was trying to do too much with the ball. But actually what he's done now, I think the phrase he used was, he's convinced of his own qualities now and he knows what they are. And you're right. And actually sometimes you can literally see him just about to burst forward. I saw this a few times against City where he just went, and then he just kind of sat back and reined it in a little bit. So I think, you know, Wenger seems to be suggesting he's matured, he's more comfortable with what he's good at, and I think we're really seeing that at the moment.
So do you think then it was Wenger's long-term plan to bring him into the team, or has it been more accident than design? Who wants to take that question?
I can't see anyone going anywhere. It's a bit of an accident, but you know.
But I'll tell
so
you what,
what,
though.
Who cares?
The thing is, back to the transfer window. It's the first transfer window. I wasn't going, oh, please sign someone, please sign someone. You know, we've got Gabriel, fine, let's see what he's like. But having Ospina and Coquelin, it's like two signings. And it's the signings that we've wanted, so miraculously.
Well, to go one stage further, Joe Cagliardi on Twitter says, if the form carries on until the season ends, does Wenger buy anyone in the summer? I'll start with you there, Mike.
I
don't set these questions.
Give us a tough one, so I don't. I mean, the summer's a long way off and a lot of things can change, you know. I mean, we're talking about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we were going, we've got to buy a centre-back and we've got to buy a centre midfielder in January. Now we're going, well, we bought a centre-back and we didn't need to buy a defensive midfield player. 5 months away, who knows what we're going to need. You know, Ospina's looking good at the moment, might make a couple of glaring errors on Saturday and suddenly we go, shit, we need a goalkeeper. Why didn't we buy one in January? Bloody stupid Wenger, even that, you know. We're fickle, as Basti's already pointed out. We need to strengthen the squad in the summer. Every club does. You can't stand still. Right now, I'd struggle to say what position we need to strengthen. We probably still need a centre midfield player. You know, Coquelin is doing very well. Is he the long-term answer? I don't know. I'd hesitate a little bit. If he can carry on progressing, fine. But he needs a backup. Is Flamini the backup? I think Flamini's probably going to go in the summer. Arteta, is he going to get a new contract? I don't know. You know, so I'd say you still need someone in that area.
Would you let those players go in the summer at Basti? Arteta and Flamini?
Definitely.
Go out of the door?
Yes, I would. But I would replace them with another Coquelin, maybe, or someone of that ilk. A defending midfielder. You know, they've served the club well as they can. But I don't think they are really, to be fair, if you want to go up that notch, you know, Flamini and Arteta, I don't think they're world class, to be honest with you. They don't get into their respective countries' teams, and that's for a reason. And, you know, they're good players and good servants to the club, but, if, you know, it's not Ray Parlour, is it?
It's not Ray Parlour. I've got a couple more tweets here about some...
I was joking about that, by the way, Ray
I
Parlour.
I had a Ray Parlour pie tonight at Basti, and it was delicious.
I had the Dennis Bergkamp. Now, would we sign him again tomorrow if he was available?
I think we probably would. Tim, we probably get this question more than any other, and we discussed it more than any other, but Mr. Lancaster has asked on Twitter, Abu Diaby, scrap heap, put down, paper play, or cold job coaching role come May. Do you have any views on Abu, Tim?
I mean, he's absolutely certainly going to go, and obviously that's very sad, because we all know the circumstances of it, and you know, I think we all realise he's probably a very good player if he ever had the chance to prove it. There is absolutely no way that he's going to get a contract, and there's no way he should get one either, for reasons that are pretty obvious. I think at the moment Abu Diaby's priority should be trying to get a contract somewhere, and that means being able to play football, which he can't really, which the manager says he can't at the moment. So even a couple of under 21 games at the end of the season, I really think that that's probably, his head is more at can I play football again, rather than do I stay at Arsenal, and I'm pretty sure that's what Arsene Wenger's thinking will be. I'm pretty sure that's what everyone else's will be, and it'll be with a heavy heart, and the rest of it. But you know, we've given him, you know, a good crack at it,
quite a bit now. Of money, eh? I guess.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Just make up for it, but you know, the guy's been well rewarded. Basti, do you think we've seen the last of little Abu in an Arsenal shirt?
I think we have. I mean, I bumped into him in Hampstead High Street once.
Oh, really? Do you tell us about what happened?
Well, he was just walking down the road, and I saw him and went, "Whoa, Abu," like that. And he went, "Hello." That was it. It was nothing fantastic.
Hello, but 3 months.
To be fair, one of your better anecdotes.
Unsurprisingly, he wasn't playing at the time, which I really can't remember seeing him play that much. Since his career started, there were a few, you know, and actually, I'll be honest with you, I don't think he ever really got to the levels that we require at Arsenal, and when he was playing, let alone all the times he's not been present. So
we saw him have one cracking game, didn't we? Away to Liverpool towards the start of the season.
Yeah, and everyone held him as like an amazing player. He was back.
Yeah, one cracking game.
Yeah, no, I know, but you know, that showed the level he could get to. But
well, I think a lot of players, I don't know what the actual problems are there, but there's obviously something there stopping him from moving forward. You know, I don't think it's just injury, is it? I think there's other stuff. You know, character is an important part of football. And if you know, I remember players like David O'Leary. They weren't the greatest footballers on earth, but they were very professional, turned up. I mean, he was a good player, David O'Leary, but he wasn't, you know, silky skills or anything. He got his head down, you know, and I don't know. I don't know what went wrong with Diaby.
Mike, we've had a lot of tweets about our striking scenario and situation. We've got some of these here. Eastand 14 says, do we want to see Yaya Sanogo coming back? Another question, why didn't it work out with Joel Campbell? Was he given a fair chance? And Eastand 14, has Chuba Akpom done enough to warrant a new contract? So let's start with our non-first choice strikers. It's not Giroud and like Welbeck. These players here, how do you see them all and their Arsenal futures?
Sanogo needed to go out on loan and play regular football and at a decent level, you know, and he's doing that for Palace, and he scored the other week, didn't he? Shamak and him tore whoever it was apart. I can't remember who it was.
Southampton,
yeah, which is no mean feat
in the cup, yeah.
We haven't managed that this season, so you know, I think we've got to see how that one progresses. I from what I saw of Sanogo, I don't see him ever being Arsenal quality. But, you know, I probably would have said the same about Copland a few months ago, so I should let that one rest. Akpom seen very little of him, but he looked good when he came on the other week. Last 2 weeks against Brighton and against Villa. Plays on the last line of the defence. Runs around. He's sort of adopted the Sanchez work ethic. He closes players down a lot better than any of our other strikers do, apart from Sanchez. So has he done enough to warrant a new contract? I don't know. I mean, that's I wouldn't want him to leave now, put it that way. So I suppose on that respect he has.
Why do you think, Tim, he stuck with Akpom rather than Sanogo or with Campbell?
I think, first of all, there's the contract situation. You know, he's trying to convince the guy to sign a new deal, and it sounds like he's done that. But really, I think the kind of the Akpom-Sanogo thing reminds me a bit of Jenkinson and Bellerin, in that I think Wenger wants Sanogo and Akpom to compete with one another to be the kind of backup target man striker, in the same way that he wants Jenkinson and Bellerin to compete to be the backup right back. And I think you'll only see one of Sanogo or Akpom survive, And I think he's happy for there to be some competition there for a year or two. See how Sonogo gets on loan. Give Akpom a bit of a run till the end of the season, see what he can do. Maybe next year that changes. Maybe next year Sonogo comes back in and Akpom goes out on loan and he takes a view in a year or so. But I think he's just trying to create at both levels in the starting 11, but also create some competition just beneath. So we've actually got some young guys competing to be backups and, you know, eventually to be groomed into starting players for the future.
Cool. Basti, before I get on with my next question, what's the name of our German central defender called
Mr.
again?
Mr. BFG?
What? Do you mean Per Mertesacker? Does he have a song?
Oh, I think he's got a song.
Why don't we sing it, Basti?
Big fucking German! We got a big fucking German! Big fucking German!
I'm doing it all wrong. Hang on, how's it go again?
So is he.
Big fucking, oh, is it?
Big fucking German! We've got a big fucking German!
I can't do it!
Seriously, this man has had chai hits.
But by the way, just on the whole Akpom thing, I think Akpom looks bright. I think he looks really good. Rough diamond. Sonogo, between the two, I'll go with Akpom. I haven't seen don't forget, Sonogo played how many starts without scoring?
It was close to 20, I think, wasn't it? Or 20 appearances.
Akpom's only had a few starts, but he looks a little bit stronger to me. One was the penalty against Villa, but mind you, that was a dodgy one, I thought.
Even so, let's finish potentially on FA Cup and our chances of retaining the fabulous trophy that is the FA Cup. The fourth round the other day, crazy, big teams falling left, right and centre. You could argue out of the supposed big boys, just us, Man United, Liverpool left, right. So how do you rate our chances of retaining the trophy? Easy next round, potentially Basti, do you think?
Well, you just don't know, do you?
I'm asking questions. I'm asking you.
To actually retain the whole trophy?
Yeah. Do you think we will? Nobody knows anything.
The thing about FA Cup is it can all go tits up as they all just found out. We ought to beat Borough, but Borough beat City. So, you know, you just don't know, do you? It's a funny old game. I would very much like us to at least this season, keep our hands on that trophy.
Mike, do you think, I asked you to just pontificate on this, as we're here to do, do you think we've got a good chance of retaining the FA Cup?
Yeah, I mean, we have. I mean, with the big teams that have gone out, you've got to say, well, we're favourites, and the bookies don't often get it wrong, do they? So, although they probably made Chelsea favourites in the last round, so they did get that one wrong.
West Ham.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a home to Middlesbrough is a good tie, and the fact that they beat Man City in the last round is a good warning. So we should be prepared for that and go out going, this ain't going to be a pushover. If we get through that, it's all down the laps of the gods, isn't it? You know, you could draw Liverpool, Man United away in the next round, and then you'd be going, oh, we haven't got a fucking chance. Who knows? We might. You could easily go there and win one of those. We beat Man City in the league recently. Why wouldn't you go to Liverpool and Man United and win there? But you've got to feel a little bit confident. But it's a cup competition, and anything can happen.
True, but wasn't it great to see Spurs go out? I know they've made the final of the other cup, but wasn't it funny? When all the results come in, you thought to yourself, wouldn't it be funny if Spurs could see the last minute equalising out? And they did. How good was that?
Well,
it was amazing.
We are playing Spurs next week, aren't we?
I will bring out Basti, but
I think we mentioned it once or twice.
Don't you think that was the best match of the day, not involving Arsenal, for you?
Great match of the day. That was relaxation. That was like going to some sauna and having like lots of sexy hands all
but
over.
There was that like 60 second period on, if you were watching on Soccer Saturday, and about the space of about 60 seconds Bradford, Middlesbrough and Leicester all scored, and it was just, I don't ever remember my heart racing so much with, like you say, with Arsenal not involved, and kind of trying to stop myself dancing a jig on the sofa.
I think Bradford beating Chelsea was better than Spurs and all the other, because yeah. Bradford at Stamford Bridge, that's got to be the worst cup upset of all time, you blue-nosed idiots.
Basti, very quickly, you can answer this one. Mark Holmes has gone into the realms of madness. If Arsenal replicate the away performance at City in Europe, can Arsenal win the Champions League?
Yes, in Berlin. Berlin, we're going to win the Champions League this season. It's already done. It's already arranged.
Excellent. Now, last time, in the last pod, I didn't have time for this email from Harv Jennings in Cape Town, South Africa. So one of our international listeners. Hello, Harv. And he has quite a long email. I'll try and make it shorter. And Harv says, why is it that in recent years the replica shirts have become more expensive, but the logos have become shoddier and flake off the merest sniff of washing powder? Is it another greed-driven ploy to sell more shirts, or is that a too cynical view? At 900 grand AM time, surely we should expect more. Puma had the opportunity to at least show up Nike by giving us the first Emirates logo that lasted longer than the first pint at the Toddington. They missed the boat on that one. My O2 and JVC logos show no sign of crumbling, so I can only deduce that the above argument does hold some water. Has anybody else noticed the sponsorship flaky issue, Mike?
I don't buy a replica shirt anymore. Maybe because of that. Maybe that's why. But I can't say I've noticed. But I'm sure Harv from Cape Town, South Africa, is absolutely right.
Tim, you're a man in the know. Many international fans. Surely you must have a view on this hot topic.
Well, I stopped buying replica shirts some years ago as well. But I kind of collect retro shirts, and so I can very much identify with the kind of the very seamless, timeless, durable JVC and Nike shirts of old in the mid 90s. I've got plenty of them, and they've shown very little in the way of wear and tear. Whereas, you know, I very much doubt that this year's Puma kit will be still being worn with the same relish and pride in 15, 20 years' time.
Very true. Basti, your
view? I
do have
a little say on that. Funnily enough, I took the missus to Barcelona a lot long ago, and she went and bought herself last year's Barcelona kit, which had a really crap crest on it that was sort of like one of those ones that when you know you wash it in hot water, it starts flaking and falling off. And this year, they've gone back to the what it always used to be, proper embossed, sewn on, like made out of, you know, proper, like a badge that's stuck on. Now, like the other two here, I don't buy Arsenal replica kits anymore, but when I do, I only buy the 1971 kit. When the other one, when the sleeves go a bit pink, I'll go and buy another one of those. And you can't beat that one. That is the Arsenal kit for me. And although the collar, I've noticed, went a bit weird a while ago. The collar went... It used to be...
It was frilly.
It was a bit... It was less subtle. It was more subtle before. And now it's gone a bit like you feel like a vicar. If you're wearing it underneath a jumper or something, it pokes up a bit. Like
interesting. So, Harv, I hope that answers your question. If you've got any more hot topics for us to debate in the next edition of this podcast, please do send them in, because obviously Cape Town is obviously the hotbed of football views and opinions of the really important issues. Thank you very much indeed. That concludes the panel for today, but before we do that, don't you have a message from Steve Ashford?
Oh yeah, there is an important message from the Highbury Spy. He's saying, dear Mr. Wenger, I'm very, very sorry I've been slagging you off for so long. I really love you now. That was just after the 5-0 win against Aston Villa. He's changed his mind, but
again,
but he still doesn't like David Seaman.
Well, hopefully we'll hear him on a future podcast. But we're going to hear from the editor of the Gooner. If there wasn't enough people on this podcast, it's a plethora of talent. Here is Kevin Whitcher to tell us about what's in this issue of the Gooner. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Mark.
And did you have a pie tonight, Kevin?
I did. I had same as I had last time, actually. It was so good. The Thierry Henry, which is a venison in red wine. Always recommended the food here.
What did you make of Thierry Henry's debut performance on Sky? Did you see it, Kevin?
I think he needs a bit of bedding in, frankly. I mean, he's too cool for his own good sometimes, but I think he'll get there.
£4 million a year he gets, you know, Kev.
It's good money if you can earn it. I wish we were earning as much for our views around this
table. Anyway, what's in the new issue with the Gooner, Kev? That's what the listeners want,
well,
want to
we,
know.
Well, if we're selling a damn sight more copies, maybe we could give ourselves a rise. But on that note, the current issue is the same one I was plugging last month, because we only have 8 a season now, and it's overlapped. It's a Thierry Henry special, which has got as its main feature a bit of indulgence, reminiscing on some of Thierry's great goals, as well as articles I mentioned a month ago, such as the Arsenal membership pack guitar, which is a classic. Anyway, it is on sale the next 2 home matches against Leicester and Borough in the Cup, which will be followed at the Monaco home game by issue 249, which is now in preparation. So £2.50 from your sellers on the way to the stadium. Please indulge us and buy a copy. Much better value than your programme. And just while I'm here, a quick mention for Prasanth Kalua, who emailed a question. Sorry we didn't have time for that. And a hello to my old pal Harv in Cape Town, who I last saw in 2010, but hope to be back before too long. On that note, back to our genial host, Mr. Ollington.
Thank you, Mr. Witcher. Basti, I hear you might have a final song for us.
Yeah, I think a bit of a classic, seeing as it's 50 years of Match of the Day, we should have sort of an oldie but goldie.
Okay.
And what's more older than golden than good old Arsenal?
Go on, Basti.
Come on, let's
strum it up.
Good old Arsenal, we're proud to say that name. While we sing this song, we'll win the game. Good old Arsenal, we're proud to say that name. While we sing this song, we'll win the game.
Save the best to last. Brilliant, Basti. Now, before we go, I want to thank our other tweeters we haven't covered tonight. Hopefully we'll get you next time. Prasanth Kalur, thank you to your tweet. And also somebody else, whose name I can't find on my list now. Mark Blondell, thank you to you as well. Hopefully you will tweet us next time. Well, that's it for today. You can contact us at Twitter at GunaPodcast, email us GunaPodcast@gmail.com, or go to Mike's nude Snapchat page, details of which are on the Guna website.
Nude?
Yeah, it's what all the kids are doing.
Oh, Snapchat. That's a double take there.
It's what all the kids are doing, Basti, seriously. Thank you, panel. Thank you, Tim.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Basti.
Dankeschön.
And thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Mark. Till
and
next
Kevin,
time.
And Kevin, in there, in the background, thank you to you as well.
You're welcome, Mark.
It's been a marvellous panel.
Super.
Next podcast comes in early March, but until then, stay careful, be nice, and generally have a lovely time in life. Okay, everyone. 1, 2, 3.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-da, all good friends and jolly good company. Hey!
I had a beer and a half, that's why.